Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the gyps in the BC. It is Saturday, the fifth day of October, Anno Domini 2024, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I apologize for being Chris Horn.
And we all feel bad about it, but at least you apologized. And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to bring you news, views, things that you're not going to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Have you paid your dues? Before we start, I want to thank Chris Horn for not coming in early so we didn't have to be exposed to his... I'm sorry. We want to thank Chris Horn.
I'm right here, Nick.
Oh, that's you. I want to thank Chris Horn for coming in. Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere
again
in the Southwest. And Chris was gracious enough. He was allowed to leave the house with the ankle monitor. It was all fine. And he's here now. And I'm just not letting up today, Chris.
No secret why I'm available.
All right. So, you know how we're always telling you to never use the same password on multiple systems? Well, here's just another reason why. Officials in Ireland have fined Meta, the parent company of Facebook, $101 million for storing hundreds of millions of user passwords in plain text and making them available, broadly available, to company employees. Yes, plain text means exactly what you think it means. Mm-hmm. Absolutely no encryption on your passwords.
They can see them all.
And yes, making them broadly available to company employees also means exactly what you think it means. Your Facebook password was passed around to many, many employees at Facebook's parent company, Meta. And that means not just your Facebook password, but because Meta also owns them, your Instagram, WhatsApp, Messenger, Oculus, and Threads passwords as well, assuming those were all different, which, knowing many of you, probably they weren't. Meta officials said that the error was found during a routine security review of the company's internal network data storage practices. They went on to say that they uncovered no evidence that anyone internally improperly accessed the passcodes or that the passcodes were ever accessible to people outside the company.
That they know of.
So if saving them in plain text was an error, the best way to uncover no evidence is to do no research. Despite those assurances, the disclosure exposed a major security failure on the part of Meta. For more than three decades, best practices across just about every industry in the universe has been to cryptographically hash passwords. Because the conversion works in only one direction, from plain text to hash, there's no cryptographic means for converting the hashes back into plain text. When you type in your password, that same hash algorithm is applied. Two hashes are compared. And if they're the same, it's the same password. And if they're not, it's not. The likelihood of two different passwords generating the same hash is astronomical. Because hashing algorithms work in one direction, the only way to obtain the corresponding plain text is to guess, a procedure that can require large amounts of time and computational resources. Sometimes supercomputers, millions of years. Or quantum computers, 8.2 seconds. So what can you do about it? Well, nothing. Your password is out there. The first thing you should do is change your password and make sure it's a password that you've never used anywhere else. And make sure it's long and complex, upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and symbols. Then change the password every place else you've used the same password and also make it long and complex and different. This is where password managers come in. It can not only keep track of all your passwords and inform you when you reuse one, but it can also generate long, complex passwords with a click of a button. No effort involved on your part. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Meta's password database was stored in plain text. And your choices are, I'll change my Facebook, Instagram, etc. passwords immediately. I've already changed them. Going commando, baby. And I don't use any of that stuff. So far, we've got 26 votes, and I don't use any of that stuff is in the lead. So all of you people don't use Facebook. Interesting.
Well, everybody else is frantically changing their password.
Well, everybody else is probably going commando. Point of fact, that's the way that's going to work. So you can vote at the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. And this just comes right back to the password managers that we keep harping on and harping on.
And it's so easy to use them, and it reminds, like you said, they're so complex, there's no way in heck that, you know, most average folks are going to crack them.
I use a 100-character password with upper and lowercase numbers and symbols.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, crack it.
Yeah, go for it.
And I don't have to think. Back in the day, when you would set up a computer for somebody, you'd say to them, now pick a password. They would freeze.
Yeah,
like deer in the headlights.
Shut down. No idea how to make a password. Now you just click a button. You say, I want, you set it up ahead of time. I want 100 characters.
Slider bar. Yep.
I want it. And you check off, I want uppercase, I want lowercase, I want numbers, I want symbols. And then when it's time to create a password, you just click generate. It makes the password for you. And then it saves the password for you. And then it puts the password in for you.
Yeah, because I think it's important to say that even though it's Meta in the news right now, we should all assume, and I think at least us here in the room, we assume that every single service we use is eventually going to have, like, oh, you peel off the next layer, you peel off the next layer, and then eventually everything is in clear text, and there's no real password security at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the right assumption, and a password manager is your only way to protect yourself.
Well, like with NPass, the minute you go into a thing, it automatically suggests a long, complex password. If you're set up to use NPass, I mean, it just automatically does that. And like you say, it takes no thought. It just will sit there, remember it. And the only thing you've got to remember for NPass is your master password. That's the only one. You can have, you know.
And you can change that whenever you want to.
I mean, I must have a couple hundred different passwords that I've put in for different accounts over the years. And, you know, there are sites, even if I don't think I'm going to go back to them, I don't care. Just on the off chance that it is, I go ahead and take the 2 minutes it takes to put it into NPass, and then I don't ever have to worry about it in case I have to come back to that, because it remembered the long password, and my data and information is protected.
Right. And, by the way, the NPass database, I don't know about all of them, but the NPass database is encrypted, so you don't have to worry about where you store it. In addition, it is encrypted based on your password. So don't make the password A. Make that password decent.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be 100 characters. Yeah,
it'll complain. If you pick something really terrible, it'll complain and say, hey, this password you've chosen is a bad idea.
Right, right. But what you can do is once you've got a password, it puts it into the database.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I think it's important to say that because I've helped people ramp up and convert their online lifestyle to using one of these password managers before. It is different than it was before, right? You can't just say, oh, yep, my password is Hunter 2, and, you know, everybody in the family, whatever, knows it.
Well, the other nice thing I like about NPass when setting it up, you know, besides just storing, say, passwords, say you're logging into a particular software package or something like that, say Quicken or whatever, and they also give you key codes. within EnPass, you can set up other fields, whether it's comments or anything else, additional fields that if you've got to keep track of that key code, that, you know,
and all there's a notes field, so yeah, it's just plain text.
You can just paste them in there in case, for, you know, so yeah, you don't have to hold on to that, you know, email, because, you know, it's got the key code for it, you know, taking up space. And I store mine over on Google Drive, so I can access it from my phone, my tablets, my laptops, or computers at home. So it's right with me anywheres and everywheres that I go.
And I think it's also interesting for me to note that we've tried all these different third-party password manager things, right? Like, I use 1Password, because that works well for my broader family. But Apple and Google have each added their own product relatively recently,
right,
to move into this space, to say, like, you know, we understand that sharing passwords is really important, but other secure content, like, you know, credit cards, and here's the combination to the safe, or whatever.
I have all of that stuff in EnPass.
Yeah.
And I have set up EnPass on my wife's computer and given her my master password.
What, yep, is your master password again?
Oh, here, let me write it down,
okay,
for you.
Okay, good.
So when is the right word, something bad happens to me someday.
Yeah.
Which will, to all of us.
Inevitable. She has access to, mm-hmm, everything, credit cards, online stuff, banking, every single thing. How many times have we heard somebody comes in, my husband, my wife passed?
Oh, I had it a number of times.
Right.
Well, he put a password on it, and I need you to open it up. Sorry, ma'am. I wish I could, but if he put a master password on that machine when it boots, I can't get at it.
Yeah.
If it had been in some other place, you might have been able to crack it. But when back in the day, people would sit there and put it right on the computer. So even if they walked away, they'd have a timeout on it, usually 30 seconds or so of no activity. It'd go to a screensaver and lock it, because that's the way businesses wanted it. They didn't want people, all of a sudden, somebody else sitting down at your computer and using your terminal and doing who knows what. So,
right. It was, and so, just not, you know, people.
And it's not just your immediate family. Like, for me, we jumped at the first one that had, like, a family plan approach that we could share with the grandparents or aunts and uncles and say, look, I'm never going to look at your passwords, but if we all use this same thing, the same account, and share it, any one of us could have some issue that takes us out of the home for a while, and we'll be able to make sure that your mortgage gets paid, log into your banks, and make sure everything continues,
right,
until you're home and ready to take over again.
And all you have to do is enter it into EnPass once.
Yeah. Yep.
That's it. That's all you have
done
to do.
And the alternative is needing to go find, where is the notepad that they keep that has all the passwords?
Or look at that little notebook that somebody keeps that they never cross anything out.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, you have to try 200 or 300 passwords to get to the right one. Don't get me started on that.
No, my...
Brian.
My wife just finally got through that. Matter of fact, when she was off visiting our grandson in Minnesota, she went through and got rid of all her sticky notes and two different pages on a tablet, you know, notebook that she had crossed out and tried this one and tried that one. And she took the whole 3 weeks but got rid of everything. Everything now is in EnPass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I told her, I says, I don't care how, you know, if you won't use that password again for the next 6 years or whatever, it's in there just in case.
Yeah.
So she went through and did every one of them.
I've got like 400 passwords in this thing. I've got passwords for ICQ, which doesn't even exist anymore.
What?
Exactly. And I, you know,
yeah,
still got,
I mean,
I just don't bother to remove it. It's in there.
I just,
it reminds me not to reuse that password.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point.
Yep.
Because who knows where the ICQ database is now?
I hope it's available for download.
I hope so, too.
Because I said some really good stuff on ICQ.
All right, we should probably go to the phones. Our first caller, and I hope waiting patiently online, is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you this afternoon?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, very well. Thank you for asking. My question is about disabling the on-screen keyboard from automatically populating itself on my laptop.
Is it, what type of laptop is it? Is it a Chromebook or?
Lenovo, Windows 11.
Okay.
I think that there is an accessibility setting that once that is turned on, the accessibility mode says, I'm going to keep helping you. I'm going to keep looking for that. And that's where I would look. And if you give me a moment, I'll get my Windows laptop out and try and find it.
You sure a ball peen hammer won't work?
It would work one time.
But you can. There is a setting in Windows 11. It's in Start. Hit the Start. Select settings.
Right.
Personalization. Taskbar. God knows why it's under Taskbar.
It's Windows.
Right. It's Windows.
That makes complete sense. I
Absolute
would have put it
sense.
Under
nonsense.
Network devices.
Well, see, right, and now I'd have put it under the color page where you change the color of your screen.
Absolutely.
And then you can toggle it on and off there. So it's settings, personalization, taskbar.
All right, I'll give it a try.
Yep, let us know.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good
thank
day.
Thank you. Good. Thanks.
Whenever I read Microsoft documentation, I finish the sentence, whatever, and I just add, obviously.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's usually like, wait, what?
Right.
Why would you do it that way?
Well, exactly.
Obviously.
Obviously you would do it that way. Because it's Windows.
And somehow being as snarky as possible with their interface choices makes me feel better.
And that's one of the things that makes people crazy with Windows in general. Is that it just has made such odd choices.
Yeah.
You know, why would you put the keyboard under the taskbar?
Yeah.
You should. My thought would have been accessibility as well. That would have been the first place I would have looked.
I'm bamboozled as to why it's not.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Nope.
No, hold on one moment. I do have somebody that's been trying to call, and I've been trying to put them on hold, and this has happened about four times now, and it's getting dropped. So if you want to try again, I'll try to get you on hold, but I don't know why the third line all of a sudden is dropping calls.
Yep.
Okay. I apologize.
If they try again and get through, then Nick will really tell us his 100-character password.
There you go. We're going to stick with the name Mark, but this time we're going to go to Rochester, New York. What's up, Mark?
Well, I've been trying to get something to work, and I've tried under both OpenSSL and also under GPG. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to work with AES 256.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What are you trying to do with it?
Well, I'm going to try and actually use it. The problem has been this. I've Googled my problem, and I'm trying to get a command line for actually getting it to work with a file in and file out. And I've looked through everything that they had at Google. I've had the tutorials, the manuals, and nothing seems to work.
What operating system is this?
Linux. Mint.
All right, so I have a tool that is Unix-y that it may or may not be available in Lint or in Mint. Sorry, I'm not sure, but I've used one called AES Pipe.
AES Pipe.
Yeah, let me search a little bit here. And I've used that for backups, where you basically give it a password and then you pipe it because it's called AES Pipe. You pipe it a file, and it'll use AES, the one that's built into your CPU, so that it's fast.
Okay.
And it'll be encrypted. And to me, that is as convenient as anything else.
I see.
If you wanted something more portable, I would probably stick with GPG.
Well, you can also use an OpenSSL to encrypt a file.
Yeah, which I haven't.
So
I haven't done it that
what
way.
What program have you been using, Mark?
Basically, I've tried both of them.
So if you say OpenSSL space ENC space dash AES dash 256 dash CBC.
Yes.
Space dash in space and the file name.
Yes, and then out.
Space dash out and the file name.
Yes.
What do you get?
I get nothing. It does not encrypt anything. And it says too many, too many parameters.
Interesting.
Yes. Have you been putting a space somewhere in the dash AES dash 256 dash CBC?
Nope. He's got hyphens between AES 256 and 256 and CBC.
Mark, do you think you could get on the YouTube stream right now? If you commented there with what you're actually typing, I could reply with, hey, here's what I think the real syntax is, because honestly, typing command line or trying to relay a long command line over the air or just audio period is I'm going to get it wrong. My mouth is going to do the wrong thing.
You're
going to
transpose something.
Yeah, right. Like it's just, it's not you, it's us. I mean, mostly Nick, but...
It's mostly me, yes.
I'll tell you what, I'm not in a position to do that, but will give the AES pipe a good try. Is there anything I need to know about AES pipe that may help me out?
Well, I'll tell you, as a long-time command line user, every time I install a new command line tool... I read the man page on it.
Okay.
And I might even start with like AES pipe space dash H or dash dash help and see what it wants me to do.
Okay.
But I bet that it's going to do the same thing that OpenSSL is going to do. And if you use OpenSSL, you know that you could even decrypt it later on Windows or a Mac or whatever, somewhere you might otherwise have a difficult time finding AES pipe. So I think sticking with OpenSSL is probably the best choice.
And I'll post a link to a bit of a program a web page that might help you out.
Okay.
I'll do that during the break, which we're coming up on.
Where would I go for that?
Soundbites.org.
Okay.
And if you scroll down, you'll see... latest links heard on the show.
Okay.
And it will be in that list in about, well, during the break.
Well, that'll be fine. I thank you very much for your help.
All right. Thank you. And good luck with that. Let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I've used this approach before.
Right.
Where you have some system level backup thing where I'm plucking files from the file system and then I just need to send it somewhere and have it get encrypted. And that's why AES pipe worked better, where OpenSSL doesn't always like things. This is the very Unix-y, if you're a Windows user. I'm sorry.
Right. No, I get that. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Chris Horn, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. You can give us a call, and we will take your questions, assuming that the system doesn't drop your call. We will be back in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back. back. I keep waiting for some sort of
intro,
a sign to some other show that's
yeah.
going on.
Yeah. No, he cut that out.
I know, and I just can't.
He's just dumping it in your lap.
Dumping it in my lap, and here it is. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David Enright.
And I'm Chris Horn with Inside Baseball Soundbites Edition.
And welcome back. We have Fred from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Fred?
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hiya.
I was thinking about your sharing your password with family members.
Right.
I have tinkered. I've used it a couple times. I'm not real fluent with using it, but sharing a Google Drive document or Google Drive folder, making it a shared drive, is that secure?
Nope. No. Two reasons. One is that, although we have no real evidence of this, it is quite likely that Google scrapes all the stuff you've got up there and uses it to train their AI or whatever. But we've seen that if someone can get at your Google Drive, and it's not easy, but it can be done, then they can read all of that stuff. If it's encrypted, then with something like NPass, if you encrypt the database, then if your password is strong enough, it'll take them decades to break the encryption, at which case, by then, it probably won't matter as much.
But on the flip side, I mean, the reality is all of that is as secure as Google can make it. Because even though we individually might be concerned about, like, oh, I've got stuff in a Google Drive, and I shared it with my spouse for their account, and it's now it's sharing between two different accounts, something along those lines. There are a lot of companies that use Google to do this with their corporate secrets all the time. And like Google or Alphabet's risk to screwing that up and then being sued is incredibly high. So that it is a thing that they want very, very badly to not break and not turn against them. So I like to think that I'm relatively safe and secure for that kind of thing because nobody cares about my data.
Well, there's
like, oh no, my shopping list or whatever. Like the
right. Well, I'm talking like master passwords and
yeah. I think that's fine because, like, if I was a writer and I was writing a book, then like Nick said, I might really be. I might not put my the manuscript for the thing that I'm writing, my original content, directly on a Google Drive and share it with anybody else because AI training stuff doesn't really care about copyright laws at all.
So Google Drive unshared is secure?
I don't think it's any more or less secure than it is shared because the mechanism for you to access your Google Drive is really the exact same thing as it is for somebody you haven't shared it with to get access to it. Now, that being said, if your password is bad or the person you're sharing with, if their password is bad or their system is compromised in some way, then it's less secure.
Okay.
But as far as Google is concerned, the way sharing works is really the exact same mechanism that you use to access your data.
So another alternative, possibly Google Gmail to Gmail is encrypted on both ends.
Yes,
the transport is. Email,
yes, Google Gmail is encrypted on both ends, but once it reaches the other end, it's decrypted again.
Yeah.
So if their system is compromised, people will be able to read that document.
But your Google Drive works the same way. Like everything we would use, is. I would say it's encrypted in flight, or your data is encrypted when it's on the wire. It just gets decrypted once it gets to you.
Okay. And then I'm going to, I guess, assume that Google Keep is probably just as unsecure as Google Drive.
Pretty much. I would assume that all of their services have the same approach to security and sharing, because that's, I think that's how they build things in general.
Now, although I will say this, Google Keep encrypts your data in transit, right? So from your machine to Google servers, and they say that it is encrypted at rest in their data centers. So it gets decrypted when it comes down to you.
Okay.
So it's encrypted. So it's decrypted when you're looking at it, but saving it and getting it back, and while it's sitting there, it's encrypted.
Okay. Well, I'm looking for an alternative way to share my NPass master password with a loved one that will take care of all my stuff.
Right. Now, let me admit that I was rude.
Yeah, you get there.
I'll get
Nick,
there.
You got it.
Apparently, according to this, Google Docs not only encrypts files in transit, but also at rest using AES 256.
Yeah.
So they're encrypted up there as well, so you're as secure there as you are anywhere else. So you could share them as a Google Doc. Now, again, the caveat is that how secure is your local password? How secure is their local password? And how secure are both of your Google Docs passwords?
Right.
Right. So that, I mean, in general, that's your problem. That's always going to be the entry point for most people. They're just going to break your password.
Yeah. And I think there's also a chance that the simplest thing that could work here is to print out your master password, put it in an envelope and seal it, and then, you know, have like
break. Write your name across the back.
Yes. In case of emergency, break glass, here's the master, and give it to your friend and say, put that in your fire safe or whatever they got.
Hey. Okay. Seems I've lost you.
And, well,
no,
I would
we're
say,
here. We're yeah. here. That just makes the most sense. You know, there's no perfect security.
Right.
So the best you can do is what works. And again, Google Docs are encrypted both in transit and at rest. That is to say, while you're uploading and downloading them and at Google server. So that's good. But again, how secure that really is depends entirely on your password and the password of anybody you give access to that document to.
Okay.
So for example, we keep a caller log here at Soundbites.
Uh-huh.
Basically, name and city and what we talked about. That is a public document. I make it available to anybody.
Right. I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah. So that document is encrypted going from me to the server. It is encrypted at the server, is encrypted from the server to you, but once it hits your machine, it's unencrypted.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if somebody breaks the password, now this is a public document, so I don't care. But if it were a private document, if somebody broke your password, they could get at that document. If they broke my password, they could get at that document. So the security of that document doesn't depend on Google, depends entirely on you and the other parties you share that document with.
Okay.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah. If you've got a 100 character password, it's pretty hard to even type in. So if I use a Chromebook and we switch users and I go to type in my my password and it's 100 characters long, invariably it'll take me 3 times to do it.
But you don't have to do that because you can run MPass on your Chromebook and
right,
copy and paste it.
But switching, not when you're switching users.
We're switching users. Yeah, exactly.
So then you would have to share your MPass.
Yeah. They've shown that the cryptographically significant password, where it's all upper lowercase and punctuation and numbers, that doesn't really matter. It only matters if it's a short password. If you have a long password, my suggestion is you just pick a phrase that is significant to you. You know, now is the time, right? Like you pick something.
I think that I shall never see.
Yeah, right, like something like that, and you just do all lowercase. And maybe you could put some punctuation between it, or you separate it with numbers so that it is easy to type, and it's easy to type on your phone, and you don't hate yourself for making a really complicated password that you could never type in.
Yeah,
I've certainly been there, maybe even today. And thanks, Nick. And you just use that. The length of the password is the thing that matters most. And periodically changing your password also doesn't really matter. They've shown that that's as long as you have a long password that is not guessable, not hackable, changing your password regularly doesn't really improve security as long as you, you know, keep it in a secure place.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, in my head, it's probably not a secure place, but... That's the challenge that I've had with using my daughter's Chromebook.
Right.
Is if to let me borrow your Chromebook. I'm going to look at Gmail, whatever, something on Drive that is hard to view on my phone.
Yep.
Right. No, I get it. So as Chris said, long is better. But it doesn't have to be complex if you can't make it that way. It
doesn't have to make you miserable.
Right.
Well, I've got...
All right, Fred, we got a bunch of people waiting.
Okay, great. That's good news. Thanks.
All right, thanks Fred.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I will admit that at one point I had a long password for one of the online streaming services. And it worked great until I tried to put it on my wife's older Roku.
Yeah.
And it didn't accept the go to the web and type in this code.
Right.
I had to start typing, you know, down, 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 over, 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 over for this insanely long password. About halfway through it, I got really angry.
And the one thing you might consider, though, is with the holidays coming up, I mean, we're already setting up Christmas at the store.
Oh, yeah.
And it's ridiculous. But they're going to start seeing the deals within this month on computers. And, I mean, I've seen some inexpensive ones. So if you're just, you know, surfing, you know, the internet and that type of stuff and doing email, you know, an inexpensive Chromebook is your solution.
For 90% of the population, a Chromebook is more than they need.
And you don't have to worry about the viruses, the spyware, the spam, and everything else because the system is technically locked. That if something tries to get in there and attack it, like we saw here with Nick, he was sitting there using his Chromebook, and all of a sudden it says, oh, your Windows machine is infected.
Don't touch anything.
That's my favorite.
And we go, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I apologize to Fred. I thought we had people waiting in the line. Apparently we do not. But yeah, I got very excited this week because one of my Chromebooks went end of life.
Yep.
This actually excited me because now I can play around with putting Chrome OS Flex on it.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
So that's kind of exciting.
Well, I had a Phantom Caller, you know, you could tell it's some call center. And it says, yeah, we just wanted to inform you that your Amazon account is being hit for 1,000. Blah, blah. I go, really? So I was sitting at my computer at the time. So I click go in there and I says, gee, I'm sitting here looking at my account. There's nothing going on here. Who are you trying to fool?
Click.
Click.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we've said this before,
and
so
it's going to hype up more.
All you because Christmas is coming.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is actually go to Amazon or whoever they're telling you.
Yeah.
Go to your bank. Go to, you know, PayPal, wherever it is, and look at it. Trust me, if there's a problem, they'll tell you.
Yeah.
For a consumer, a normal consumer, Amazon will never call you. Google will never call you. There is no amount of effort they're going to put in into calling you and trying to get their money. Even if you really owe them money, they'll just turn off your service and wait for you to come to them.
Mm-hmm.
They all know that. The only people reaching out to say, oh,
the scammers.
It's the IRS. It's the, oh, the IRS.
Yeah.
They're really concerned. That's always a scam.
Look, we've got a page about frauds and scams on Soundbites. So if you go to soundbites.org, again, bites with a Y, and you look at some important links, the third one down is frauds and scams. And it talks about, you know, where you can go if, in fact, you've already become a victim.
Mm-hmm.
But down at the bottom are important things to know to keep you safe. And the number one thing is never answer a phone call from a number you don't know. Every phone on the planet has a call screening feature. But any Android phone, any iOS phone, and that's pretty much every phone on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So if a number comes up that you do not know, hit call screening. And what you'll get is a computer voice saying, hi, this is Google or Apple, and we're screening this call. State your name and why you're calling. If it's a legitimate call, they will state their name and why they're calling.
And why they're calling.
Otherwise, they'll hang up
because
they don't want to take the time. They got to get on to the next scammer, the next scam victim.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll hang right up. And I cannot tell you the number of times I've just clicked.
Oh, yeah, I do. If you don't show up in my phone book, it goes screen call. Because if it's that important, you can sit there and leave a message. They still do that. You know, in the old days, I know a lot of folks don't have them anymore as answering machines, but you do have a built-in one on your phone that you can sit there and leave a message. So if you're legit, do that. The other thing that scares me, and I've seen it a couple times now already, that I can't stress enough between now and the end of the holidays. If you get a call and that they're demanding money and that you go get, whether it's Apple Pay cards or Target store card, you know, and pay them with that, hang up. I guarantee you, you will not get in trouble. Not one moment. If they tell you to go get some credit cards or, you know, gift cards type of thing, hang up. I guarantee you, they will not call you back.
And your grandkids, your kids, your nieces, your nephews will never text you saying, I'm in trouble. I need a Google Play gift card to get out
of this. Any gift cards,
Now if you go to a lot of stores, you'll see at the pay station, there's actually a sticker there saying, if someone...
Right.
Is coercing you or has convinced you that you need Amazon gift cards, it's probably a scam. And it's good to see that.
Mm-hmm. I was sitting watching a movie one night on my television, and I got a call. And it said, hello, I'm a friend of your daughter's, and she's in jail, and she needs you to go get gift cards for bail money.
Yeah.
I turned to my daughter, who was sitting next to me watching the same movie.
We need to talk.
When did you get... I said, let me pass the phone to her. And I passed the phone to
That's great. Yeah.
But the point is, that's scary.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That's what they're preying on.
Had she not been sitting next to me, there would have been that moment where I thought, oh, my...
Yeah.
So, but the thing to do in that instance is hang up and call her. Or put them on hold and call her. If she answers the phone, your first question should be, are you in jail? And if so, how do you have a phone?
Yeah. Because that's one of the things they take away from
right.
her. Yeah.
And when she says, no, I'm not in phone, what are you, senile now? You know it's a scam.
Yep.
And again, as it says on this page on important things in order to keep yourself safe, you have to scroll way down to the bottom to see it. The third bullet point is no legitimate company will ever, ever, ever ask you to pay them with a gift card or cash. That's a huge red flag. So there are just a few little things that you can do to protect yourself from these scams. They're listed on this page. It's not a long list.
No.
If nothing else, copy and paste it into a Google Keep or document that you print out. I don't care what you do.
But have it handy that you can refer to it when in doubt.
Yeah, right. And for any of these calls, even if you think it might be legitimate, if you ask for more details, oh, okay, they're in jail. Which jail is that? What is the phone number for that jail?
Right.
Can I call you back and confirm? All of those things fall apart.
Oh, they'll hang up in an instant.
I've had a new one twice in the last month where I've gotten voicemail on my cell phone saying, hi, it's an automated message. Hi, we're trying to confirm that this is a real number with a real person that will answer. I'm like, well, I'm not going to reply to that. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I won the lottery there, not answering the call in the first place.
My absolute favorite one was I got a call from somebody purporting to be from my bank, and it actually was my bank,
mm-hmm.
randomly. And they said, there's been a problem with your account. Can you give us your account number? I said, how do you know it's a problem with my account if you don't have my account number?
Right.
Well, we're trying to verify that it's you. You called me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to pick a better way.
Why would you not know that's me? I answered the phone, which is my phone number, which you called.
Yeah.
I was born at night, just not last night.
Exactly. So, it's no thank you.
Yeah.
Or can you read us your credit card number? It's been a problem with your credit card. Can you give us the number? Well, if you don't know the number, then how do you know there's a problem with it?
Let me check. Do I have a head wound? No. All right, so I'm not going to read my credit card number to anybody.
Or I like the ones that will call and say, well, we've got a problem with your MasterCard. Oh, really?
Well, it sounds like your problem, not mine.
And what is that? Well, there's been some erroneous activity on it. I go, really? Yeah, and we're just trying to... Because that's funny. I don't have a MasterCard.
Right.
You know, so it's like maybe a corollary to this is you sign up for the online account for your bank, your credit card, whatever, because if there's something actual fishy going on, they'll email you. You'll get so if you get a phone call and an email and it's really from the bank, you can log into the website. Don't click the links in the email. You can log into the website and double check it there.
That's the other thing we always tell people. Log into your bank now. Go for the real thing. If you have to, go to a branch and ask what the correct web address is.
And log into
your bank, make it a bookmark so you can go back to it. If somebody calls you and says there's a problem with your account, log in. I promise you, if there's a problem with your account, when you log in, the website will tell you that.
Yeah. Right. Well, I got CMB in my phone book, and when there's any fraud or that, they all of a sudden will call me and let me know a fraud alert and a text mail.
I get that from my bank.
And it's like, yep, do you want to go through with this? And I go, yep. You know, go ahead, let that one through. If not, they stop it.
Right. I've said many times, I got a call, did you buy a half a dozen fur coats in Florida this morning? You know what? I did not. I did not. All right, that music tells us that you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but despair not, for there's a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, and I'm sorry, a whole nother hour of Chris Horn, and a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and of course, a whole nother hour of you if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We'll be right back with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Well, that would be sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm the cosplay version of Chris Horn.
And I don't know that you would win the contest. I'm sorry. And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. An announcement that came as a surprise to absolutely no one. Microsoft has announced that the September update can cause devices to reboot again and again and again. Yes, the dreaded blue screen of death has returned once more to Windows users, still left shaken from the CrowdStrike update fiasco in July. This time, however, a green screen freeze has also been seen by some users. Microsoft's latest update to the Windows 11 operating system was only released a few days ago on September 26th, yet that has been plenty long enough for lots of folks to get hot under the collar about the consequences of installing it. While KB5043145 was meant to bring a couple of new features, as well as fixing issues with the Edge browser and Task Manager freezing, that's not all it introduced. Microsoft has now confirmed that the update can leave customers with a Windows 11 system that, and I quote, restarts multiple times or becomes unresponsive with blue or green screens, unquote, after installation. So, you know it's going to screw up. We don't know how, and we're not sure what the response is you'll see on your screen. Thank you, Microsoft. But that's not all. Some users have also reported that the automatic repair tool is opening following a number of reboots. On the security side of things, Microsoft has also confirmed that BitLocker recovery can be triggered by this annoying, to say the least, system update glitch. Unfortunately, for now, at least, there appears to be no mitigation. Microsoft has simply said, and I quote, "We are currently investigating this issue. We will provide an update when more information is available," end quote. Microsoft has provided a temporary fix for the blue and green screen Windows 11 reboot loop issues, but let's be honest, it's less of a fix and more of a pretend we never installed that solution. That's right, Microsoft recommends that you simply reverse the update using the known issue rollback feature, assuming you can get into your machine again. This can remove non-security updates and should get you back up and running again. Are you seeing this issue? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
I like that Microsoft is like, this one's on us. We're gonna take the hit for this one. We're so sorry.
At least they admitted that one. I mean, what else could they do? You install the update and suddenly your system is constantly rebooting.
Yeah.
There's a cause and effect thing here.
Yeah.
I understand causation and not confusing.
Definitely, only one way to point the finger on that one.
But this, there's just no way around that. So,
I have some sympathy though because. Drivers, if we're talking to hardware, is a hard problem. And real security, like BitLocker, is a hard problem. And anytime you're making changes to both of those at once, especially to try and fix something that you messed up last time, we wind up rebooting a lot.
And this is why, for years, Microsoft has been telling their shareholders that they are going to go to Microsoft on the web. Because if all main hardware features are identical, they have less of a problem. They'll also need fewer programmers, but that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
And then it becomes the hardware manufacturer's problem to deal with drivers. And Microsoft never has to look at them again. And I get it. That's a very seductive thing if you're Microsoft. I get that. But, you know, right now we're stuck in the land of, and you're right, there's a certain amount of sympathy for Microsoft. No two computer systems are identical.
Oh, I have sympathy for the problem. I don't know how much from Microsoft itself I have.
But yes, but I, you know, no two systems are alike. When I was at RIT, we used to buy all identical laptops.
Yeah.
So that we could, you know, put one image on and they would be fine. But if we had to replace a laptop, even like a week later, and that sometimes happened, it would be different.
Yeah, because the drift in the manufacturing was enough that the operating system wasn't smart enough to just say, oh, you know what, this video card is a little bit different. I'll adjust.
And you look at it, you know, the old video card is an A4352, and the new one is an A4352.01.
Yep.
Well, guess what?
Yeah.
That's not the same video card.
I mean, luckily it's not like that anymore. You can
not so much.
You can pretty much switch things around.
Well, it's because there's only three companies on the planet making motherboards for laptops.
Yeah.
One is for Apple, and MCI and
Asus.
Asus are the two that make them for Asus. Yeah, Asus.
There you go.
Yeah. Are the two making them for the non-Apple world. And so,
in Lenovo, regardless.
Right.
So there's not that much.
But it's not much. And in fact, they're all essentially using the same set of components anyway. I mean, there's a Bluetooth chip.
Right. And it's basically Intel-based AMD, or now there's some ARM.
And we'll see more ARM as time goes on. But yeah, so, you know, and I get it. There's 100 billion computers out there and no two are really alike. So I understand why Microsoft has the problem. But you know, they just can't test everything, but doggone it, they should test everything.
Financially, they have, they have their own cloud, right? Like they have the resources to be able to predict outcomes like this, and I'm sure they're trying.
Well, but, and that's just it.
Within a budget.
They laid off a whole lot of people who were in R&D and who were in Q&A.
Yeah.
Or QA, rather. Quality assurance. You lay off quality assurance people, you get lower quality. Sorry, that's just the way it works.
Way life works.
And so this is, you know, this is strictly on them. I can't say...
I'm not going to take the blame for this one. It's not me.
Right. And you know, the real problem, of course, for many of the people listening who are tech support people, and I know many of them listen to this show, if not for no other reason than to laugh.
we're entertainment.
They said, what?
Right. But they, for tech support people, they're the first line of this. And when somebody's computer doesn't work, they bring it to you and say, what did you do, or how do you fix this?
Yeah.
And too often the answer is, Microsoft did it. Nothing we can do about that. We can put Linux on your machine.
Yeah.
That'll solve this particular problem.
Let it keep rebooting.
Let it keep rebooting. Those are the issues. And here, Microsoft has thrown up their hands themselves. So we don't have an answer. Yet. At least they said yet.
Right. Undo. But at least there's a way to undo, right? Like,
right.
At least it's, you know, you're not at a dead end.
Well, assuming you can get to it, and assuming it works, which that tool doesn't always work properly, but assuming that all works, it means you're now one space back from where you were before, and it also means you're going to get Ding to do the update again.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's no perfect solution for this. But, you know, it is what it is. Microsoft has made some changes recently for years. You know, your machine updated when it updated, and the heck with you, basically. They're now trying to do updates like Linux does updates in the background. And for many things, you can do that. Even Linux, if you replace the kernel, at some point you should reboot. But you don't have to right away. And that's what was different from the Windows world. You know, if Windows replaced a print driver, you reboot it. But now they're trying to do it so that you don't have to reboot as often.
Yeah, and anything with access to real hardware usually cause you to a reboot, or anything that changed your security profile.
Right, right.
Reboot.
But yeah, so there's just a lot of there's a lot of problems with the way Windows has always done. They're very monolithic. Okay, and we see that in the registry. One big file that has everybody's configurations in it, that's the stupidest idea in the computer world. And the updates were monolithic in the same way. You know, you got an update once a month, it updated everything, and you had to reboot because there was some feature somewhere that touched the hardware.
Yeah.
Whereas Linux... they take a modular approach. Every program has its own config file. In Linux, if I write a program with a config file, and Chris writes a program with a config file, and Dave writes a program with a config file, if Dave screws up his config file, it doesn't bother us at all.
Right.
In Windows, because everything's in the registry, if Dave screws up his configuration... it can potentially kill the entire registry.
Well, I mean,
how is that a smart idea?
Yeah, I mean, Windows config is way more complicated. Now, sure, there's stuff in the registry. That's your system-level configuration. But
I know
apps
many
on their
regular
own have
programs
three different
put their
layers
stuff in there.
Of config and state and temp files and stuff that they keep around. If you ever turn on Show Me the Hidden Files on Windows...
Do not do that.
And yeah. There's a lot. There's a lot of stuff there. I wish it was as simple as there's just one config file and then here's your, you know, thumbnails or something. No, it's much more complicated.
No, but if you screw up the registry, you're done.
You're hosed.
You're
there's,
done.
There's repair stuff you can do. Windows will try very hard to
there's repair
to
stuff you can
from,
do.
Yes.
Not the average user.
Windows will try very hard to prevent you from doing that.
I understand that. And there's a shadow registry, and I understand all of that. But it's still a stupid idea. I'm sorry. It is.
Well, that's one thing on this program we have never done. And that's told folks how to go into the registry and do any repairs of any kind. Because all it takes is one keystroke to mess it up in your host.
Yeah.
Right.
We will not, nor have we ever, encouraged or even hinted at going in there and doing any type of repair whatsoever. Because we don't want to be responsible that you mess up your computer and then you come back and say, well, the guy said in Soundbite said, yeah, you just got to go in here and do this and do that, and it'll work. Yes, there are things you can do. But you have to know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah. Right.
Plain, simple English. You got to know what you're doing. And because, like I said, it's just one keystroke from wiping it out.
It's woodworking with a lightsaber.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, it's measured six times cut never.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should go.
I understand why the registry is still a thing. And it's because... from a corporate standpoint, rolling out or enforcing changes is really only one way you do it. It's you make sure that this is set in the registry and then synchronized in some way to all of your users, and then you can say, yep, we have that setting done. Where if it's all config files now, there's a lot of squirrely reasons where that's harder.
Okay, but not everything needs to be in the registry, and too many programmers.
Oh, I agree. Or why wouldn't you have separate registries for different concerns? Yeah,
exactly. It's just a dumb idea.
And for a while,
Microsoft insisted that all configurations were in the registry.
Yeah, it started with Windows NT.
Right, and that's just dumb. If I'm going to write a program, I want my config file separate. For two reasons. One, I don't want to screw up your config. And two, I don't want you screwing up my config.
Yeah. So, I mean, modern macOS has a similar kind of thing.
And you got the preferences
it's even
folder.
More squirrely. So it's the defaults command. you can get at a lot of weird stuff that on your Mac you should
Linux,
never
touch. There's slash Etsy and there's .config and .config. Something else, I forget what it is.
There's stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
But managed by programs, because software is complicated.
Right, software is complicated. And again, they're all discrete things so that yours doesn't get in my way and mine doesn't get in your way. So it's just, I've never liked the registry. I think it's a stupid idea. And it's the other thing is it's too tempting. Right. If I'm a programmer, how easy is it for me to put stuff in the registry? Shouldn't be that easy.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be that easy for every jamoke who writes a poor program in Visual Basic to put stuff in the registry.
I mean, the hard part is it's structurally the inside of the registry is really counterintuitive. You really have to be an expert to open the registry with regedit. Not a secret. The regedit is the command to open that up and look and say, "What is this? Why is it organized this way? Is there anything?"
Well, organized is very generous,
right? Like it's very strange.
Yeah.
And as soon as I get into, I'm deeply in the weeds if I'm in the registry.
A guy who used to work for me and now actually has the job. He used to text me. I'm in the registry. Okay. Don't be in the registry. I don't care. You want to screw up your machine?
Yeah.
Right. Stay here all night fixing it. Don't touch any of the servers. Yes. Of course, eventually all our servers were Linux, so he couldn't touch them anyway. But, I get these things. I'm in the registry.
Yeah.
Leave me alone. We don't want to say that the registry is impossible to use. We don't want to give the impression that, nobody can use the registry.
It's not for the lighthearted.
It's not for the lighthearted, and it's really not necessary for so many programs.
Mm-hmm.
How many games keep their scores in the registry? That's ludicrous.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's just, because it's convenient. It's there, and they use it, and it's dumb. If you're writing something that doesn't really require registry level access, don't use the registry.
And I mean, I've been in like an IT or developer kind of situation. I've been in the situation where like, oh, you're having this problem. Here are the exact instructions from Microsoft or the company itself to say, go into the registry, changes from a 1 to a 0. And then save it. And by the way, here's how you make a backup beforehand.
Well, and that's the other thing. Never make a change in anything without having a backup.
I mean, unless it's Nick's registry. Then
unless it's my registry, sure, and then just go ahead. It's just, it gets kind of ridiculous at some point. Okay, I've completely lost
the
call. There it is.
As Windows 10, Windows 11 have matured, the registry, having to touch it or even think that it even exists is less and less and less of a concern.
Right, but when it gets screwed up, so often it's something in the registry.
Yeah.
So often. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Greece, New York. What's up, Roger? Roger?
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what's up?
I have Windows, and I have a printer, and I for years have been able to print documents, from Windows. But about a week ago, when I went to print, this other program came up, and.
What version of Windows are you on, Roger?
I'm in Windows 10.
Okay.
Okay. When I went through the routine in Word to print something, what came up normally it just goes right through to my printer, but what came up was Paperport. And tried to then use PaperCourt to print, and it didn't work. I couldn't get anything to print.
Okay, okay, so
did you install PaperCourt?
Oh, yeah. When did you install PaperCourt?
I can't really. Well, there's a date on here. I'm in programs. There's a date here of 4/21/22.
That's when you installed it? Or, I mean, it could be PaperCourt is out of date. PaperCourt, it looks like it's a program for managing documents and PDFs and stuff like that. Do you actually open PaperCourt and use it to manage your documents?
I didn't until a week ago when it just sort of opened itself.
Surprised you by saying, good news, you have me installed. My suggestion is if you're not actively using it, uninstall it and then try printing again and see if your printing behavior goes back to normal.
Yeah, you can do that through the control panel. There's also a PaperCourt remover tool, which should be installed in your computer if PaperCourt itself is installed. But from the control panel, in Windows 10, you know, you click Start and Control Panel, Programs and Features, or depending on which version of Windows 10 you have,
right,
it might be Add or Remove Programs.
Right, and then it's Start and Settings and then Programs.
Right, and find PaperCourt in the list of installed programs. And then
I'm there. I'm looking at programs and features now. And what happened? What I didn't say previously is that when I couldn't get anywhere with PaperCourt, there were two entries for PaperCourt in programs and features. I deleted what appeared to be the main PaperCourt program.
Yep.
So deleted or uninstalled?
Uninstalled.
Yeah, I'm sure you have to do both of them. One of them is probably the service or the driver thing, and the other one is the app itself. Yeah, there's a lot of them have that.
Yeah, the other thing is to look for anything entitled Nuance, Nuance, since that's the parent company of PaperCourt.
Yeah, there is a Nuance PDF Viewer Plus.
Oh. Well, Windows 10, you shouldn't need a PDF viewer anything.
Right. So, you should probably uninstall that program as well.
Okay. Okay, so just get rid of everything, uninstall everything Nuance.
Anything Nuance, anything PaperCourt, anything ScanSoft, depending on which version of PaperCourt you have.
Mm-hmm.
So all three of those. And Xeon. Z-E-O-N.
Okay.
It's just another program that gets installed. So look for all four of those. And uninstall any of those you find.
Okay, what was the last one, Nick?
Xeon, Zeon.
Okay. All right, I don't see that on the list. But,
all right, I'm just saying it could have been any one of those.
Sure. Okay, I will go ahead and delete the rest of Nuance and see what that does for me.
Perfect.
Good luck.
Yeah,
thank you
luck.
Very much.
Yep.
Boy, I really, really dislike a family ecosystem of software that has all different names. And then like, wait, why is this here? Oh, it's a secret dependency of this other thing. I think one of the terms for that is crapware.
Crapware is the correct term. Bloatware or cruft is the polite term. But I don't think we need to be polite with these companies.
But when it gets in my way, it's not an angry enough term.
Exactly right. And we find that there are just a lot of programs that don't go by their name. They go by the company name or some internal name.
Right. And that other piece annoying. is really there to kind of resurface your need
right.
on that top-level program.
Right.
Hate it.
Yep, I completely agree. And often they'll re-download something.
Right. Oh, you're missing the paperport part of this.
Let me re-download that for you in the background. Thanks, yeah. You're welcome. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Chris Horn, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm the diet version of Chris Horn. Your mileage may vary.
Chris Horn light.
Yes.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. And we have Don from Pittsford, New York on the line. What's up, Don?
I'd like to go back for a moment to the risk of mucking around in the registry and what... And what might happen? And
Don, your laugh reveals that there is a cautionary tale on the way.
Well, I've stayed on the tightrope across Niagara Falls. I use Sea Cleaner Professional.
Yeah,
and one of the utilities under tools is fix issues with your computer's registry. And I use this, and it brings up the problems, and I have opened it, and what I'm seeing now is about 6 or 7 items. And they begin with the problem, unused file extension, and that's the first 3 of them. And then the other 4 are application paths issue. I have... merrily removed those here for a couple of years, and without with the program gives you the opportunity to back up the registry, which I have not done, and I just go merrily along and say fix this stuff, and it deletes all those. What risk am I at here with Sea Cleaner Professional?
First, you should always back up the registry, always. You know, it's a one click, and it takes a few minutes. You should do it. The second thing is the things that you've mentioned are really fairly innocuous. So they're essentially one-line entries that don't have an impact anywhere else in the registry.
And they're an indication that you had an application installed, that when you uninstall it, their uninstaller was sloppy or broken, and didn't remove the changes that it made in your registry.
That's why we recommend Revo Uninstaller for doing any removal of programs that you've installed on your computer.
Right, but what you've done is really the lowest level and most innocuous thing you can do in the registry. And so it's kind of fine. Each of those is a one-line registry entry that has no effect anywhere else in the registry.
And I think Windows will give you the opportunity to fix it. Let's say it was for PDFs, and then you go to open a PDF, and then Windows will say, hey, I can't open this with the program you had configured. Let me pick something else.
Normally what it'll do is, if it's a particular feature, what it'll do is turn the bit off. So the entry is still in the registry, but it's been turned off. So that's why you're really not doing any damage to the registry, per se. You're just turning that bit off for that one particular item.
Right.
Okay, I'm looking again at the more extensive definitions here on the one-line entries, which you're absolutely right on. And... in terms of uninstalling programs, I do have and use Revo Uninstaller, but the uninstall line entries on Sea Cleaner, they say programs uninstalled that I have not, or at least not been aware of ever uninstalling.
It could be an old Windows dependency, too. Like, there's certainly, like, media types and stuff where Windows says, you know what, we're not going to support that anymore. That's ancient. Just uninstall our handler.
Right.
You open that.
Right. This all comes down to the danger of playing in the registry. There are some things Windows has done in the background, and there are some things that other programs have done in the background that leave cruft in the registry.
Yeah.
And yes, mostly you can remove them if you know what you're doing without harm. But knowing which ones could cause you a problem later is the skill. You know, you go to an auto mechanic and it takes an hour for them to do something, they charge you $300. They're not charging you for the hour. They're charging you for the 20 years of experience that let them only take an hour to fix your car. And the same thing with the registry. There are people who know when they look at a registry entry, they can say, oh, that's a one-liner, you can get rid of that without a problem. Or, wow, that's probably something you shouldn't be mucking about with.
I would just leave it.
Okay.
I don't think it's a sign of anything malicious or, you know, horribly broken.
The only issue you will have is that the registry will take a microsecond longer to load because it's got those dead entries in it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was concerned about, because reading about this utility, it one gets the idea that if you leave these entries on, it will slow down your computer quite a bit. However, you have mentioned the need for one thing, which I'm not doing, which proceeding with this CCleaner feature, back up the registry.
Right.
If I go ahead and say yes on that, where does that backup stay on my computer?
Yeah.
Your choice. You can decide where to save it.
It's probably a thing that CCleaner is going to manage on its own or tell you how to manage it.
Well, it works just like any save. It brings up the dialogue and you decide what folder to put it in.
Yeah.
Which means you can also put it on a thumb drive.
Or out on the cloud.
Does it back up the entire registry?
Yes.
Your registry is not very big.
Well, it can get big. So, you know, it will tell you how big it is, and it will tell you if there's enough room to back it up. My suggestion is always to back it up on an external medium so that if there's some sort of problem.
But the one thing, though, if he's using Revo Uninstaller, not only cleans out the cruft in the hard drive, but it also goes into the registry and will also allow you to remove those entries within the registry safely, because it'll sit there and list them. And you can sit there and say select all and then delete.
Same thing as CCleaner. They're really, in some ways, redundant.
Yeah, they're using the same logic.
Right. But,
do you feel that CCleaner is an effective program? It's highly rated.
Yes, it is. How are you? It is a very effective program.
Mm-hmm. You can just choose whether you want to use Revo Uninstaller or the CCleaner.
Right. They're both very good programs. But please, next time you go in and muck about in the registry, back it up.
Yeah, and I think
it only takes a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
That's one thing I don't...
Unless you've got a tiny little hard drive, you're not going to notice the loss of space.
And that's the one thing I like about Revo, because it automatically, before it goes and removes programs and all that stuff, it first goes through and makes backups of everything that it's going to do, just in case something gets mucked up, that you can go back to it, whether it be in the actual hard drive or in the registry. It does it automatically.
How do you find it with Revo uninstalled? How do you find the backup?
It's in the file system that you can do a restore.
And it knows where it saved it.
Yep. Yeah. So, Don, it sounds like you're trying to be sensitive to keeping your computer fast. Right?
Exactly.
Like not broken. There was a time where registry mishaps or cruft in the registry would really slow you down. I think it's mostly not a big concern anymore. If your computer's slow, it's because of
this. No, it's
it's a computer that Microtech built for me, which is probably about 2-4 years old, I guess.
So it's probably an awesome computer.
Yeah. I wouldn't worry much about the registry. Clean it up is fine. Where it mostly slows down these days is in loading. And machines are so fast nowadays that it, again, it's microseconds slower.
Right. So here's my experience. If your computer is running super slowly, do you have Norton antivirus or McAfee or something? Do you have an antivirus something that's running that is not the one that came with Windows? Because all of those other ones, in my experience, slow your computer down and make even a brand new computer suck.
I'm using AVG and
dump
also,
it. So I would dump it and use what came with Windows and get rid of it. Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
What, antivirus program?
Windows Defender has gotten
Windows
much
Defender,
better.
Just use that.
I disagree with that. I like AVG or McAfee only because Windows takes its sweet time updating their files, and I would rather have a company that is devoted to that than Windows, when they decide to get around to it.
Windows Defender
just
leveled up a lot when they started making Windows 11 because of the corporate-level focus on that kind of security. So Windows Defender right now is way better than it was beforehand and faster.
Yep. All right.
I know. Just one thing. How about Malware Bytes? I use that also at your recommendation. Is that
And that's
true?
Fine because you're going to run that discreetly by yourself as opposed to constantly in the background.
Right.
So using that is fine.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. CCleaner or Revo Uninstaller are great programs.
Yeah.
Malware Bytes is something we recommend that people run regularly, but since it's not running in the background, it's not slowing your machine down.
Right. Anything you're running in the background, security or otherwise, can impact the speed of your computer. And if you're worried, like, how come my computer is slow or whatever, reevaluate the stuff that is installed and running all the time. Meaning, on Windows, what is in the system tray in the bottom right-hand side?
Right.
Do I know what that is? Can I get rid of it?
One of the things that people often run, that people don't know they're running, is Office. Office loads when the system loads and runs in the background.
Yeah.
And it loads Word and Excel and PowerPoint so that when you start them, they're fast to start.
Yeah.
Well,
that'll eat up memory for sure.
And it eats up memory, which slows your machine down. And people don't know that, and they therefore, they say, my machine is slow. It's not running as fast as it could. Well, there's part of your problem. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Webster, New York. What's up, Jerry?
Hi, guys. I have a question here. I do Zoom meetings every week, and it's part of a group that we all get in on. And the audio sounds okay, but the visual, I can't seem to get the camera to work. They have, like, participants in the meetings, and everybody is about 20 or 30 of us. Everybody has their little image on their screen. I used to be able to get that to work where I could see myself as part of the meeting, but it's just the audio that works now, not the actual camera.
Can other people see you?
I think so, yes.
What kind of computer is this, Jerry?
Pardon?
What kind of computer do you have?
I have a Lenovo laptop.
So it's running Windows 10 or 11?
11, yes.
So there's I'll go through the obvious things. There's a physical shutter that may be built into your laptop, that could be open or closed. I'm sure you've checked that, but I think that Lenovo's and HP's have like a BIOS level kind of setting that will disable the camera, and figuring that out.
It's a little different.
It's an adventure.
But let me go high level.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris is very much a weeds guy. Let me start
I was born in the weeds.
First, ask if other people can see you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
If they can, then what's happened is in Zoom, you chose, and it might have been accidentally, but you chose to hide self-view. And so if you restore that, you'll be fine. The way you restore that is in the upper right corner of the video window, you can click View. There's a drop-down menu, and one of the choices is Show Self-View.
Oh, Show Self-View. Okay.
Right, and the reason that even exists is that when you hide yourself, you have more room to see other people. And, you know, some people choose to see everybody else in the meeting, one more person in the meeting, and some people want to see themselves. So that is turn on and offable, if that's a word. And so if you go up to that top right corner, from your point of view, it would be top right corner, click View, and then click Show Self View.
Okay.
And see what happens. So the idea being that if, in fact, your camera is working, because you said it was, right?
It was working, yes.
Yeah. And Zoom, you can...
So it is likely that at some point you accidentally clicked Hide Self View.
Oh, okay.
And in Zoom, you can always start a call just with yourself.
Right.
And test to see if you can see.
Right. And so so you can try that. And so you can both... So anyone can hide themselves or show themselves. And you hide yourself when you're already seeing yourself. You hit the three little dots in the corner of your picture. And one of the choices is Hide Self View. And then once it's gone, then you have to use the View menu in the top right corner and click Show Self View.
Yeah, I'm using Zoom Workplace, which seems to work pretty well. It's just for this one glitch there with the camera. I don't know. So I will try that.
Yep, give it a try and let us know.
Hopefully you'll... Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
My problem is that people usually ask me to turn off my video.
People prefer it when you turn off your video.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why.
We apologize to everybody on YouTube right now because Chris is completely visible.
Yeah,
Chris
is
completely visible.
What are we going to do?
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I don't know.
If there was a petition or something, we could put that on soundbites.org.
Or I can
maybe
do that and point to Chris.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's people right now are doing little topological max. How are they sitting? Where are they sitting that he can do that? All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, yeah. Speaking of sea cleaner, I just opened it up, and it says I have 17 outdated drivers on the health check.
Yeah.
Does that need to be resolved?
I would not let a third-party program manage the drivers. If Windows doesn't want to update them, if you can't do a Windows update, I would be very suspect. I would be very worried that I was going to have a bad time.
Yeah. Depending on the compatibility of those drivers with your system. Because no two, even the video cards, even though they're the same brand, they could be totally different. Just by a chip, make them a different version. But if they're going by generic.
Yeah,
you know, guessing whether it's in or out, I wouldn't trust it.
In addition, if you're not having any problems, don't muck about with your drivers.
Yeah, Windows should tell you. Right? Like if you were doing the normal updates for Windows, it should include that in your normal routine of.
And it used to be that you know we were absolutely right. Windows stunk at updating drivers and getting things right, but.
Yeah.
You know, at least with 10 and certainly with 11, they've gotten so much better at that.
If Windows 10 changed it.
Yeah. So my suggestion is ignore CCleaner when it comes to drivers.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
It's probably not in your best interest.
Another quick question I have. All of a sudden on Yahoo Mail, there's an ad that sticks to the top of the list where it, you know, list all the upcoming emails.
Sure.
That just showed up a week ago. That has never been in there in like 10 years.
Yeah, they make changes fairly regularly.
I think Yahoo is struggling to make money and increasingly trying to turn your email into income for them.
The paid version.
Yes. And I think for that reason, is Yahoo's been on this downward slide for quite a while. I am not a fan of doing anything I care about on Yahoo.
Who do you recommend for a good email? Gmail?
I mean, probably Gmail. That's really the default for a free email account. If you want to pay for it, I think there's a lot of other options.
Right, but if you're looking for free email, Gmail is the place to be.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I'm looking at my Yahoo Mail now. Yeah.
Yahoo has been in the news for the wrong reasons,
yeah.
At least in IT security arena.
Right. And you're right. You know, these places have been providing a free service for a very long time. And nobody's buying, not enough people are buying the premium version of any of them. So, you know, the web has spent the last 50 years trying to figure out how to make money. And the only thing that works consistently is ads.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, they've tried micropayments, they've tried, you know, subscriptions, they've tried everything. I do the Ask Nick newsletter subscription. A lot of people want it. They don't want to pay it's only $25 a year, for heaven's sake. It's two trips to Starbucks and it's a year. But okay, that's not the point. The point here is that I don't accept ads yet and I'm struggling to not
disclose.
Yeah. This close, but I'm struggling to not. And all people have to do is pay the $25 a year. And, how do you make money? The consistent answer for the last half century has been ads. Ads work. Ad networks exist because they work. And more and more people are using ads to do things. One of the stories I didn't get to today was that Amazon, on the first tier, right? You can pay to not get ads, but the first tier has ads. They're going to put in more ads.
Yeah.
Right now it's 4 or 5 minutes, but they're going to go to the broadcast standard, which is 15 minutes per hour, by the way, a quarter of your time when you watch any broadcast television is spent watching ads. And they're going to do the same thing, only you won't be able to skip them. Yeah.
That sounds great.
And the real problem, of course, is that right now all of their shows are being made with the assumption that there aren't going to be ads.
Right.
So they just throw in ads. And I have that problem on Plex. You're in the middle of a movie, and in the middle of a sentence, they throw an ad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's 14 minutes in, and they want to show an ad.
And they have bills
to pay. They don't wait till the person finishes talking.
Sure.
Nobody's sitting there watching the thing going, put an ad here, put an ad here.
Well, because then when they come back to it, they repeat maybe the past 30 seconds, and you rehear that whole conversation start all over again.
Yeah, but unless the program is insanely compelling, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's simply the truth as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
You have taken me out of the show, and I'm not getting back in.
You reminded me I have something better to do.
Exactly right.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly right. Yeah. Now I'm watching YouTube shorts. Okay, that's more engaging than your commercial. It's a real problem, and I get it. I absolutely get it. They have to make money. And the only proven method of making money is ads. I'll say it over and over again. But the problem is, we have that problem here.
Yeah.
At the station, we have PSAs and stuff like that because not enough people are members. And yet they complain. Well, you've got too many things.
Too many ads.
Well, they're not ads, but
rest. Yes.
But you've got too many of them. Well, become a member. That's how you stop that stuff.
Yeah.
But that's the only other alternative.
It's the transition to paying for the content that you care about.
That's exactly right. And you're going to pay one way or the other. You're either going to give them money or you're going to give them attention.
Or your data.
Or your data. And that's the way that works. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week, and it's over. I want to thank Dave Enright, who stayed awake for much of the show. I want to thank Chris Horn, who took time off from his Saturday and called his parole officer and got the right to come here. We want to thank him for that. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. Good questions this week, and hopefully there'll be follow-up next week. And I want to thank all of you who listened, because, you know, we've been on the air for 35-plus years, and that's on you. It's your fault. And we want to thank each and every one of you. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?